Welcome to GW Healthcast. Joining us today is Dr. Cynthia Tracy. She's a professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences, and she's affiliated with the George Washington University Hospital. She's here to discuss convergent therapy for atrial fibrillation and the spectrum of care that we offer for atrial fibrillation.
I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Wilner. Thanks for joining me. So to get started, why don't we just define atrial fibrillation?
Atrial fibrillation is an extremely common heart rhythm disturbance or abnormality, and what people typically feel when they have atrial fibrillation is a rapid, irregular heartbeat. And it happens in people when the normal electrical system is no longer in charge, and the top part of the heart is just sort of quivering at rapid rates and sort of sending that electricity down to the bottom part of the heart and getting people to feel sort of that irregular, rapid rhythm that is very uncomfortable. It might feel like a fish flopping in their chest or something like that.
Does that affect the pumping of the heart? Does the blood still get where it needs to go?
In some people, it can have an effect on the function of the heart, but there are many people whose hearts function just absolutely fine. That doesn't mean that they'll be asymptomatic or not have symptoms related to it, but the actual squeeze ability of the heart or the amount of blood that's being pumped out is just fine. What makes people symptomatic, though, sometimes is that with each heartbeat, a different amount of blood may be pumped out. So they may feel that sort of chaotic bumping in the neck or bumping in the chest. But overall, heart function is typically not affected.
Okay, so who is likely to get atrial fibrillation?
There's a lot of things that we look for or understand as being underlying causes. Probably the two most powerful things are obesity or being overweight and sleep apnea. Those are two sort of modifiable underlying things that can really play into AFib. And anytime we have a patient presenting with atrial fibrillation, we make sure that we talk to them about these different things. Other things that are associated or commonly seen with atrial fibrillation are conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, or other underlying heart disease.
Is this rare or common, or can you give me an idea out of 1,000 people walking around, how many have AFib?
It's extremely common, and it's hard to give you a specific number, but it's fair to say that the older we get, the more likely we are to have atrial fibrillation, so that by the time people are in their 80s or 90s, a very high percentage of people in that age range will have AFib.
So some of it is really due to aging of the heart, and then some of it is maybe preventable if we take care of ourselves with exercise and proper weight and things like that. Is that right?
Absolutely. There are things that people can do that will reduce their likelihood of getting AFib. Unfortunately, by the time somebody gets the AFib, it may be too late to do those sort of preventive things to make it not happen. But we still can do an awful lot to reduce the risk or minimize the risk of the atrial fibrillation.
Well, it does sound uncomfortable, but I don't know if that's a big enough motivation to go to the doctor and get it fixed. What are the other ramifications of AFib, why we really want to treat it?
We really want to know about it. We really want to treat it. The biggest problem that can happen with AFib is some type of stroke or embolus. A clot can form in the atrium. If you think about the atrium just trying to beat that fast, it's just not going to squeeze very well, and blood clots can form in the heart. And if those get dislodged, they can go wherever they want to go, including to the head, and cause a stroke. So it's very important if somebody's having that type of symptom that they get investigated, evaluated, and see if they are having AFib and see if they are a candidate for blood thinner or management to prevent clots. We also want to make sure that the heart rate isn't too fast and that doesn't damage the heart muscle just simply by going too fast for too much of the time.
And this is something that would probably get picked up on a routine electrocardiogram, is that right?
That's the best first line place to look for it. Especially if somebody's having a sensation of irregular heartbeat, yes, the regular EKG that your doctor does in the office, that's an excellent way to find it. The problem is that many people don't have it all the time. In other words, they'll have it once in a while, or they may have it for a day or two here and then not again for some period of time. For those people who have sort of these symptoms that come and go, we have to do other types of monitoring that allows us to catch things as they occur. nowadays, there are so many different types of monitors that people can use. There are ones that look sort of like a broad Band-Aid that we can apply to the skin, and they can just walk around with that recording the rhythm for a couple of weeks. We have things we can place underneath the skin. And many, many patients nowadays come to us with their own diagnosis because they have some type of a home monitor device that they're wearing around their wrist. And that actually is very helpful for us as we're watching patients over a period of time.
Okay, so it's important to diagnose and it's really important to treat. So, Dr. Tracy, you're a medical doctor, but if I have AFib, who should I go to?
I think you want to start with me, with the medical person. I think the only time where a surgeon would sort of be the first line for management of atrial fibrillation would be in a person who's having surgery for another reason. If they have a problem with their heart that requires heart surgery and they have AFib, then yes, of course, the surgeon will address that at that time. But otherwise, for most people, it's appropriate to start with the cardiology side of things, where we can assess risk and determine what our best treatment options are.
Well, this has been a great discussion. It's great to know there are proven techniques for atrial fibrillation control, which can decrease the risk for stroke and help patients live healthier lives. Thanks for joining me on GW DocPod.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us on GW HealthCast. To schedule an appointment, please call 1-888-GW-DOCS or visit gwhospital.com for more information or to get connected with one of our providers. Please also remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast and all the other fascinating podcasts from the George Washington University Hospital Library. Physicians are independent practitioners who are not employees or agents of the George Washington University Hospital. The hospital shall not be liable for actions or treatments provided by physicians. Individual results may vary. There are risks associated with any procedure. Speak with your physician about these risks to find out if surgical procedures are right for you.